What's happening to children's books is not child's play. The opinion cartel is not only using new woke children's literature to indoctrinate the young, but is even editing well-known titles from the past to make them politically correct. And this subversion targeted at our youth is part of a broader agenda to replace American culture with an entirely new one. Let's take a look. Hello, everybody. This is Gary Benoit, your host for Beyond the Cover, and today we have with us Ben Faulkner. Ben, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Gary. Glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you. And Ben, you, of course, are a researcher and a writer for the John Birch Society.
I am.
As well as its affiliate, the New American Magazine. Mm-hmm. And normally when we have this this program, Beyond the Cover, Ben, we talk mm-hmm. about something that has already been published.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, I want to talk with you about a project that you're working on that you've only begun writing, but you've already done a lot of research about it because it's just so fascinating.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be really good for our readers to know what is upcoming. Mm-hmm. But you're working on an article with regard to children's literature.
I am, yeah. So if you've been following the news, you'll see that Roald Dahl, who's I think one of our great children's writers, mm-hmm. he's the writer of Matilda, James and the Giant Peach, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which became Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Right, the movie version.
Right, mm-hmm. which everyone has seen, and it's mm-hmm. really a classic of cinema and a classic of children's literature. Recently, his books have been reissued, and the publisher went to a organization called Inclusive Minds, which edited the book to so-called sensitivity standards.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of what you've seen with these edits has been kind of arbitrary, wholesale edits of what he wrote. And it's disappointing to see because I feel pretty strongly that Roald Dahl has claimed to being not just a great children's writer, but a great literary writer. It's his works are books that adults can, you know, read and
sure.
be reacquainted with and be moved by, and he's just a great visionary writer. So it's disappointing to see his work have to adhere to this woke ideology, especially after his death.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's disappointing.
They wouldn't dare do it, would they, if he were still alive?
No, and I don't think he would agree to this. A lot of what you've seen with these edits, and I actually was able to print them off, but the publisher said they were pretty limited in scope, but they number in the hundreds.
Right.
And
yeah, I guess limited is subjective.
Yeah, limited subjective, especially when the publisher is getting some bad press about this, so they probably prefer to say that the edits are limited. But they're actually very expansive and very strange in some cases. The erasure of gender is one of the themes, one of the motifs in these edits.
Can you give an example of that, Ben? How do they get rid of gender?
Sure. For an example, just on the first page I have here, one of the original pieces of writing was, "Oh, do shut up, you old hag," which then became, "Oh, do shut up, you old crow." And this is the sort of thing that it's independent of, you know, anything else. It seems insignificant. But as a symbolic gesture, just the idea that we are now able to take literary works that are finished and mm-hmm. that we revere and edit them and use them as this kind of use them as something that is designed to advance a kind of political agenda. And it's not, I think literature, when I was young, we saw literature as something sacred.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't interfere with literature. Literature was largely apolitical. There are, of course, political works and political themes in literature, but art stands independent of politics. Art, I think, transcends the political. It's almost a higher realm of entertainment and expression than the political. And what we've really seen since the kind of advent of since the beginning of this kind of woke era, is the arts be dragged down into the realm of the political. And the arts now, and especially literature, but all of the arts are now just fodder in the culture war. And so something that can be edited, abused, and used to the whims of these kind of woke ambassadors now kind of ruling our culture.
Right. Well, I'm sure a lot of people would say, Ben, that it really doesn't matter if the word crow is used compared to the word hag.
Right.
But I'm sure there are other changes, too, that are much more significant, where it changes perhaps what the author is trying to convey.
Absolutely.
Change the nature of the work. But can you provide any examples of that?
Well, what you have here also are, in a lot of cases, where it says removed, 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 you have large passages that were just taken out and not replaced with anything else. But again, I think what's distressing about this is the symbolism of the edits.
Right.
Shakespeare, there's a term bolderized, and that comes from an individual whose last name was Bolder, who edited Shakespeare to family-friendly versions. I don't recall when it was. I think it was over 100 years ago. But this is something that was seen as regrettable. And the ability or the willingness to use literary works as, again, just fodder in the culture war, something that can be chopped up, that can be taken and made less pure and less expressive of an authorial intent, is something that's just a disappointing development in the culture. I think when 50 years ago, certainly 30 years ago, we revered books. Books were seen as something kind of untouchable. But now they're, again, just something that can be reduced to the political. For example, in The New Yorker, there was an essay about the novel Lolita by Vladimir Nabokov, which many think is the finest piece of prose writing in the English language. It's a book of distressing morality, but overwhelming aesthetic beauty. And the New Yorker piece was kind of a rejection of the book on moral grounds. Many think that if Lolita was submitted to a publisher today, it would not be published. And I think that's clearly the case. I think that many of our great works would not be published today if submitted to a publisher. Henry Miller, Celine, William Faulkner, the list goes on and on. Right. These are figures who would be lost if they were younger, if they
I can't, resist interjecting this, but your last name is Faulkner.
My last name is Faulkner. Not sure if there's any kind of familial relation, but I certainly admire William Faulkner. I think The Sound of the Fury is one of the great works of the English language, and his meditations on the South and race relations are profound, but they were written in such a way that would not be permitted today. They're too dark in their subject matter. They don't adhere to the kind of whims of what would be taught in universities within identity politics, teachings more generally. They're just too raw. They're too honest and too bleak. And I think works like that, truly visionary works that stand outside of what we would kind of automatically think, works that stand outside of the kind of banalities of what we are expected to express, works that shock us, works that distress us, works that confound us and challenge us. Those are the works now that are on, that are going to be in a lot of cases left on the cutting room floor, whether just wholesale rejected by publishers or basically potentially submitted to these sensitivity readers who would say, this is an interesting book, but it's a little too interesting, and therefore we should probably reel it back. And I think literature is just something that was really at the center of our civilization, and it no longer is. It's a fringe medium. Great literary books aren't being written, and if they are being written, I don't think they're being published.
How about Shakespeare? If those, you know, if those plays were written today, do you think they'd be published?
I do not think that Shakespeare would be published for a variety of reasons today. But one of the reasons why the politics of Shakespeare, I don't think would pass muster. There was a report that came out recently with from a UK agency that was monitoring, you know, white supremacist, white nationalist tendencies. Mm-hmm. And there was a concern that came out of this publication that if someone's reading Shakespeare, they're potentially they potentially have some kind of white supremacist sympathy. A Midsummer Night's Dream was recently, there was a staging of it, and there was a trigger warning of some kind mm-hmm. prior to its being performed. And I think, and then also I think recently we had a Julius Caesar staging that was done, in which it was basically just used as a kind of anti-Trump mm-hmm. theater piece. A figure who resembled Donald Trump was killed. I believe it was Julius Caesar, but this is what you see. Literature is basically just something that is designed to advance a certain left-wing political agenda, and when it can't be used in the service of that, it's not considered useful to those who operate the culture and the civilization at this point.
Right. Now, in addition to editing and rewriting the literature of the past, there's also the new literature that is coming out, mm-hmm. which is just absolutely horrible. And this includes children's literature. And you know, I'm sure most parents have no idea just how bad this so-called children's literature is that's being published today. Ben, I know you've been taking a look at that. Can you provide an example or two?
I have. So I think this is a kind of two-pronged attack. What you have first is the literature that is our classic literature, mm-hmm. which is largely apolitical literature, is being edited. And what it's being replaced with is extremely stridently political writing. Mm-hmm. I was able to take a look at this material that's coming out. Actually, books that are for babies, these are the kind of cardboard-bound right. books, the kind of stiffer books, but they're for, I think, toddlers, actual babies. We have books coming out called A is for Activist. This is about activism, environmental justice, feminism, LGBTQ rights. Woke Baby is the name of another children's book that's coming out. And it's described as, the author reframes baby activities as revolutionary acts. Waving a baby fist is fingers curled in a panther's paw, pointing up, up, up for justice. I mm-hmm. guess a reference to the Black Panther radical organization. We have Feminist Baby, He's a Feminist Too, and we have, I think most distressingly, C is for Consent, which is about teaching babies about kind of priming them for sexuality and letting them know about consent and, you know, the various questions related to consent. I think a lot of this stuff is sexualizing kids.
Right.
With a lot of the books that are about queer sexuality and transsexuality, it's getting kids thinking about these ideas at too young of an age. It's not stuff that they would organically be thinking about in a lot of cases, but it's pushing them in these directions. And I think childhood, like literature, is something that's precious. And when these politics are injected into literature or childhood, I think the results can be very dark, and I think a lot can be lost, and it's another disappointing development.
Of course, not long ago, a very small child would be able to know the difference between the two sexes.
Right.
They would be able to know that this is a boy and this other person is a girl. And today, we're told you have to be biologists in order to be able to understand those things. And of course, the kids are being brainwashed to believe that if they were simply to identify as being a member of the opposite sex, that makes that person a member of the opposite sex. What is the purpose for that?
It goes back to, so I do think that there are trans people in society, but there is a trans ideology that has come from the academy. Mm-hmm. It goes back to the 80s. You have Judith Butler wrote books about this topic in the 1980s. It comes from critical theory in the academy. And so there are intersex people, there are trans people, But the kind of radical fashion of trans ideology is something new. And I think when you turn this trans ideology into a kind of fashion statement and you present it to kids, you're going to have kids who get wrapped up in this stuff who would otherwise not be thinking in this way. Right. There are, for example, say, girls who were considered 20 years ago, 50 years ago, to be tomboys. It wasn't a situation where I think girls wanted to change their gender, wanted to change their legal sex. They just identified as tomboys. Right. I would wonder if...
And there certainly was nothing wrong with that.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Right. And I think that I think within genders, you can have a wide variety of behaviors.
Right. But there's a difference, I would say, between a girl who is a tomboy or a girl who honestly believes that she may be a boy trapped in a girl's body. Those are very different things. And I think that's what you mean when you say there's such a thing as transgenderism.
Right.
But it's really indoctrination because a boy is still a boy and a girl is still a girl.
Yeah, and I do think there are people who have... who are distressed and have gender dysphoria. Mm-hmm. And for those people, I think, you know, sympathy and accommodation is a positive thing. But you also have people who are being ushered into this ideology who would otherwise not be ushered into this ideology because they have some tendencies that may be in some cases more associated with women or maybe more associated with men. And I think at very young ages where they're impressionable, they believe that because they have these certain inclinations that they are then a different gender.
Right.
And a lot of it's very ascientific and unserious, but the results that it has in people's lives are serious. And there is regret among a lot of these individuals who transition. I won't say a majority, but I will say that if you were to look up accounts of people who regret going down this path, they do exist. And whenever there's a cultural push in a certain direction, you are going to have people who follow on that path because it's fashionable, because it's interesting, because maybe there's a group at school of other kids who are expressing this stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, me too, I'm going to get involved in this. And then they make these radical changes, whether it be taking hormones or going down the path toward a surgery, that are not reversible and that are a commitment that you can't undo.
Right.
And that's a distressing development, and I think that it's affecting people's lives in a very negative way. And I think it's tearing families apart. And the way that – the very glib way that many on the left talk about – this trans question and this gender question is very glib. And I think the glibness of this discussion is something that's ushering people toward a disastrous result in many cases.
Sure. And of course, it's being pushed from the top, just like there's a push from the top to rewrite classic children's literature, just like there's a push from the top to indoctrinate kids with the new children's literature that's coming out. And so my final question, because we're running out of time right now, is how do you see these things that we talked about today is fitting into what is happening to the culture as a whole? For example, the toppling of statues of people like Robert E. Lee or even, you know, Thomas Jefferson. Or, you know, how about people taking a knee rather than standing up for the national anthem, and the other things that are happening to our culture. Do you see that as all part of a grand strategy to change the culture and replace it with something else?
Gary, I absolutely do. I think it's a year zero moment. I think the goal is to erase the past in full and to recreate the past in a synthetic and artificial way, in a way that very few asked for and that very few think is appropriate or even makes sense. And part of that is, again, erasing the past, erasing historical figures, erasing a kind of conventional pride and replacing it with a synthetic or artificial pride. And I think it's also erasing these gender lines. I think the people who are kind of have the strings of control want to see as many people in the workplace as possible. And I think to do that, you've really seen a wholesale erasure of these gender lines.
Right.
Women become men become women, and they all rush into the workplace, which lends itself to high productivity, but also lends itself to distressed families, lends itself to social instability, mm-hmm. lends itself to unnatural situations, and ultimately very unhappy people and civilization in deep distress. And one way that you see it is in our arts, which takes us back to the beginning of this conversation, right. But yeah, that's where we are.
And I think to just instill a little hope, because certainly there is good reason for hope. When you look at the media and you look at what is coming down from the top, coming down from the cultural and the political and the media elitists, it may seem like the whole world is going crazy. Mm-hmm. But yet there are so many people, there are so many Americans and, of course, people in other countries as well who still believe in the thou shalt nots, mm-hmm. Who still believe in traditional morality or Bible-based morality. There are people who still work hard for a living, you know, who love their families, and they're striving to do the right things. And, of course, that is the hope. And it's a matter of exposing what's going on so that we can thwart what's going on and restore our great country to what it once was and can be once again, except maybe with even brighter luster.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And we'd like for everybody to take a close look at where civilization is, where culture is, mm-hmm. where it's been and where it's going. And, you know, don't just accept these elite mandates wholesale. Mm-hmm. Question them. Think deeply, you know, has civilization gotten better? Has culture gotten better? Mm-hmm. Or is it something that in a moment of entropy, in a moment of regression, mm-hmm. is it in a moment of deterioration? I think it is, but I think it can rebound. And I think people need to get on the right side of these issues and, again, look critically at them.
Oh, very good. Thank you very much for being on this program, mm-hmm. Ben. And I know it's going to be a few weeks down the road, but we're looking forward to your article.
Yeah, thank you so much, Gary. Appreciate that.
Imprisonment, forced labor, permanent separation from my family, perhaps death. I knew what could happen to people who were caught trying to defect. But the watchtowers stood yards away. The possibility of a new life in a different world, one without tyranny, was within sight. The West. I thought of the rewards no longer crushed under the boot of communism. I would work and make money, no longer restrained by the chains of collectivism. I would say what I wanted, without fear of spies and informants nearby. I would be free. The frozen rain and Romanian mud seeped from my gloves and cloths. I fantasized about a fire burning in the wood stove of my parents' home, but I pushed those thoughts from my mind, closed my eyes, and waited for the cover of the darkness.
Get Defector, a true story of tyranny, liberty, and purpose by Mark Hobovkovich with Paul Dragoo. A thrilling page-turner that will remind you how precious yet vulnerable freedom is. Available at shopjbs.org or Amazon. For a limited time, get 20% off your entire order using promo code DEFECTOR20 when you purchase DEFECTOR at shopjbs.org.